court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm the lawyer to do.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, I got some bad news for you.
For me?
Yeah, for you.
What?
I'm going to need your seat.
My seat?
Yeah, that seat you're sitting in right there.
The one I'm sitting in? You need my seat? What for?
Well, basically, I have overbooked this podcast, and I have a special guest coming in.
You overbooked the podcast? How could you do that? It's the same thing every week.
Well, because essentially, whenever we first started doing this podcast, you signed this agreement, which allowed me to speak on your behalf in case Mark Zuckerberg ever emailed us. Well, there was some fine print in there, which basically said that the seat you're sitting in, I have the right to reassign it to somebody else, and I have somebody else coming in. So, oh, and I think they're here. Oh, hey, Justin.
Hey, what? Hey, guys.
Justin.
Tommy, don't make this weird.
I gotta go.
Tommy, don't make this out.
Hey, everybody, it's Justin McElroy, brother of media luminary Griffin McElroy, and I'm ready to talk about law.
Hey, Justin. So, today we're going to be doing the podcast on airline and transportation law, and so what do you know about that?
Absolutely nothing. Let's hit it.
Huh. Well, you know, Tommy was kind of prepared for it. Maybe I need to rethink this whole thing.
Okay, well, I'll just pick up the check on the way out.
Yeah. I'm gonna need that seat for Tommy now. Yeah. Sorry, I'm gonna have to bump you.
Okay, but the check's still I'm still getting.
Yeah. Okay, post dated, third party, second check. Yep.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Justin.
Yep.
Well, sorry about.
Justin sent me back in.
Sorry.
Is that okay?
Sorry about that, Tommy. Turns out we need you in that seat after all.
Well, I don't know how to feel about this.
Well, let's just jump right into the episode. So, as you might have been able to tell from our opening bit there, this episode has been inspired by the video that has been making its rounds on the internet, the United Airlines video.
That was quite a video, Mike. I mean, I've seen a lot of things in my time. A lot of customer service faux pas, as you will, but that one's got to take the cake.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. I mean, I've seen my fair share of world star hip hop fight videos and things like that, but you know, those usually take place in a parking lot behind somewhere. But this is in an airplane where everybody's been on pretty much. You know, it's not some place where you expect to see something like this.
I mean, not only that, and I could be mistaken. I mean, you know, because I am a lot. But United Airlines, isn't their motto "Fly the Friendly Skies"?
If it's not,
it's never going to be.
It might not be a good one to pick up.
That's like the opposite of the friendly skies, if you ask me. I don't know. I mean, fly the pugnacious skies. Is it? They need to change it to that.
Yeah, United Airlines, the official airline of Fight Club.
Just don't talk about it. Nobody talks about Fight Club.
So, in case you haven't seen this video, and it's, like I said, it's been causing quite a stir on the internet. Essentially, what it is there was a flight from Chicago to Louisville, and the flight was completely full, and they needed four seats on that flight so some United crew members could get to Louisville for the flights next day. They were afraid, I guess, that if they didn't get those crew members in Louisville the next day, that it was going to cause some sort of ripple effect because they weren't going to have people to fly planes the next day in Louisville. So they had to get that crew there.
In the biz, we call that a deadhead.
A deadhead?
That's right. We had to do that on the railroad from time to time. You had to deadhead a crew to the other end of the line so they'd be available to bring a train back. And the same thing they do on airlines. You have to get crews in place to be able to fly your planes because sometimes you have more planes going into a place than coming back or something like that.
No, do they get to ride the caboose?
Not on an airplane.
Well, no.
And the railroad's done away with cabooses. You'd be sitting on a light now.
Yeah, back in the day, did you get to ride the caboose?
when you were the conductor, but a deadhead crew now, they all have to ride up on the locomotives.
Oh man, imagine if you got to ride the caboose, that'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, and see, then you have federal rest laws involved.
Right.
When you do that, you have to have so many hours of rest before you can take a train back out or a plane back out.
Or an automobile. Or a truck.
Well, the truckers, that's a whole different ball game. They keep their own logs. I think there's a lot of fudging that goes on those.
Well, I don't want to hear about trucker logs.
That's a different trucker logs. Found those at the rest stop.
So if you've ever flown, then you've definitely heard them come on the announcement. We're looking for somebody to take the later flight, and they give you a voucher for a certain amount of money. And basically, this is when they've kind of overbooked the flight, or they have a deadhead, as they say in the biz. So I've been told they have a deadhead they need to get.
I should have saved that for a legal brief. Huh?
Yeah, it would have really stumped me. I actually did it once or twice and ended up being able to get a free flight out just for taking a later flight. So
yeah, I've been involved in some circumstances like that, too. The thing that was odd about this to me, though, is it always took place while we were still in the terminal.
Yeah.
They would make those announcements. We have overbooked this flight. We need two seats. Who's willing to give up your seat? We'll offer you this amount if you do. And I never saw an instance where nobody did it. Usually somebody came up and did it, and then you didn't have a problem. What I've never seen is people already seated on the plane. You got your stuff in the overhead bin. You're seated there. And then they come in, and they want you to give up your seat. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, I think somebody there made a mistake. Somebody at the gate kind of screwed up. And that, you know, did not follow proper procedure, because I don't think you ever let somebody on the plane put away their overhead and then say, oh, by the way, you got to get off the plane.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see that. And then if people volunteered to leave, okay, well, you solve the problem. If they don't, then I think you better go for a different plan. But I don't see sending on three beefy guys to drag a 69-year-old doctor out of his seat and down the aisle, especially when you break his nose and knock out some teeth.
Yeah, he was in that video. He was all bloody and
yeah,
it was really disturbing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a poor guy screaming for help, and all everybody would do is sit there with their camera phones taking pictures and say, "Leave him alone! Leave him alone!"
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's probably good they did, because that documented it, and I'm sure whenever he sues somebody for assault or whatever took place, it's going to be a lot of evidence that's used. So,
well, that's true, and I guess if you stood up and stopped. Tried to stop them, you might be violating federal law and get yourself in trouble.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that put a whole lot of people in a bad situation. I mean, and not to mention there was probably kids on that flight and they see that.
Oh, yeah.
What does that make them think about flying on an airplane from now on?
Or trusting authority figures.
Yeah, yeah. When you have people come in and do that, and I think they were just some kind of private security type people. They weren't trained police. They weren't with the airline. They were like a private security group that worked at the airport, I think.
Yeah.
So what training would they have in handling those kind of situations?
Well, obviously none.
I know when I was a security guard, they just gave me a punch clock and said, walk the route, boy.
Yeah.
That was the training I got.
So the procedure that took place for this involuntary bumping, United supposedly randomly selected four passengers and forced them to give up their seats. And so we thought it'd be a good idea on this episode to kind of do an episode about airline travel, so we could talk about what federal regulations prevent carriers from selling more seats than a flight can accommodate, what your rights are if they are going to involuntarily bump you, and basically, if they do bump you, how much money you might be entitled to, because this is all kind of set by different federal regulations.
Yeah, because that was one of the things, too. When they first offered them money, they offered them like $400 to give up their seat.
Right.
Then they came back and upped it to $800.
It's like, let's make a deal.
Yeah, yeah. But they actually could have gone one more step.
Yeah,
they actually like could have gone up to like $13.5, I think, is what the maximum was. And they didn't do that. And they brought in force before they got there. Now, I think they should have exhausted all their means before they went to, all right, well, beat the hell out of them and drag them down the aisle.
I mean, at 13.5, I'd take a pretty hard look at that.
Yeah, you might have gotten a volunteer for 13.5.
Yeah.
And a hotel room and your meals.
Well, if you're ever curious about like some place where these rules are summarized, you can go to transportation.gov/airconsumers/fly-rights. And I'll post a link to that on the Facebook group. And that's just kind of a good summarization of all these different things in a pretty friendly way it's presented to you as well. Because if you're trying to look them up, like the actual laws themselves, it's a little hard to read through them. So, but this is kind of a good summarization from the government website about different transportation laws. So We thought a good way to present this was we go first into a kind of a history of overbooking and how this whole procedure has kind of played out over the years.
All right. But before we go into that history, Mike, it's time to approach the bench and pay for court costs.
All right, Tommy, who do we have first on the docket?
First on the docket today, Mike, is DollarShaveClub.com.
Man, I love DollarShaveClub.com, and let me tell you why.
Tell me, Mike.
I got my package in the mail recently, and that's with the executive razor and the shave butter, and got to use it, and man, it was a very, very smooth shave. I have a pretty aggressive beard, and it just cut straight through it.
You do have an aggressive beard. I can vouch for that.
Why, thank you.
Now, I liked using mine, too, and the best part about it to me was the shave butter that came with it, Dr. Carver's shave butter.
Yeah.
It just practically melts the whiskers away. It makes it so smooth when you do it. I didn't even think the razor was working. It wasn't until afterwards when I felt how smooth the shave was that I could tell.
Yeah, and the weird thing about the shave butter is it goes on clear. See, it's like you don't even notice it's there. But boy, I'll tell you what, when the razor slides over your skin, you can tell it's there because it's smooth.
It is. So shaving your face or those delicate manscaping areas, this is the razor for you.
Well, Dollar Shave Club is definitely the smarter choice.
It is awesome. You get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door.
So right now, for a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of the aforementioned Dr. Carver Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After
what?
That,
$5 and free shipping?
And free butter.
And free butter?
That's right.
And the best part is, Mike, there's no hidden fees and no commitments. You can cancel anytime you like.
Join the club today at dollarshaveclub.com/court. That's dollarshaveclub.com/court. All right, Tommy, who's next on the docket?
Next on the docket, Mike, upside.com. I tell you what, Mike, I discovered something really big, the best new way to buy business travel. It's called upside.com. And I'm telling you, if you're not a business traveler, you know someone who is, you have to tell them about upside.com. And here's why you should love it.
Every time you buy a trip at Upside, you save a ton of money, and they give you an Amazon gift card worth $100, $200, even $300 every time.
What? The way they do it is really clever. Upside bundles your flights and hotel together for one low price. Bundled pricing saves money, especially on business travel. So Upside gives you free Amazon gift cards.
If you're a frequent business traveler, your company saves a ton of money and you get thousands a year just for buying your air and hotel together at Upside. Plus, you still get all those miles.
You get to keep all your miles?
That's right. They go into your account.
Why, you'd be crazy not to check out Upside.com if you're shopping for business travel. It takes just 3 minutes to see how much you can save by buying your flights and hotel together for one low price. I can't believe it's taken this long for someone to do it. But Jay Walker, the founder of Priceline, is the guy to do that. He thought of bundling these two together for one great value.
And check out what we've arranged for you. Used our name, Dudes, BizTrip, and you're guaranteed to get at least $200 Amazon gift card your first trip.
$200 on the first trip?
That's right. Dudes, BizTrip gets you at least a $200 Amazon gift card free.
How can you not do that? It's a no-brainer. Save big on travel and get a big gift card every trip. I love Upside.com. That's Upside.com.
Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details. So, getting into the history of overbooking, it's a funny fact that it is perfectly legal for airlines to sell more tickets than seats that are on a flight. And that's called overbooking. And the reason that this is actually a practice is in large part due to somebody who is generally considered one of the biggest consumer advocates of all time. You hear that is?
First person comes to mind would be Ralph Nader.
Exactly. Ralph Nader was overbooked on his way to give a speech in 1972, and he was bumped from his flight, and he was so ticked off about it, he took the case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that case is Nader v. Allegheny Airlines, 426 U.S. 290, that's a 1976 case, and basically it helped the carriers establish a precedent of allowing them to overbook so long as they give passengers sufficient notice.
Allegheny Airlines used to be, when I was a trainee in the with the railroad about the only airline that flew out of Huntington. We always called it Agony Airlines.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and every flight out of Huntington went to Pittsburgh. That was their main hub, and everything went to Pittsburgh, and you flew for Pittsburgh. And the joke used to be, even if you were going to hell, you'd have to go through Pittsburgh.
Well, probably a lot of NFL playoff teams felt that way too, I'm sure.
For a totally different reason.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times when you see the signs of the counters on the back of your ticket to talk to you about being able to be bumped for your flights, it's in part because of this Ralph Nader case. So if you are involuntarily denied boarding, you're entitled to a payment under 14 CFR 250.5. And that's CFR stands for Code of Federal Regulations. And those are the kinds of laws which are promulgated that run essentially the executive branch of government. So they're a little bit different than the Constitution or other kind of U.S. code. These are the Code of Federal Regulations, and that's why they're in this one site. So, and essentially what this is established in that CFR is that if you are delayed 0 to 1 hours, you get no compensation. 1 to 2 hours, you get 200% of your one-way fare up to a maximum of $650. And over a two-hour arrival delay, 400% of your one-way fare up to a maximum of $1,300. And those are both the same for domestic and international flights. So there's kind of a set amount of money that you're entitled to if they involuntarily bump you like this.
Depending on your inconvenience.
Right.
It's worth more. The more inconvenienced you are, the more money you get, because that's the American way.
That seems right to me.
Sure.
So the passengers who are involuntarily denied boarding are entitled to payment in cash or check. But a lot of times the carriers don't want to tell you that. They want to give you payments and tickets and vouchers.
Yeah, because those don't cost them anything, really.
That's right. And sometimes these tickets and vouchers that they want to give you will have other limits on it, like you can't use it around holiday seasons or things like that, or they might expire.
Yeah, Jennifer Garner tells us about that all the time on her commercials.
She does?
Yeah, about her miles that you can't use. Remember, they have all those seats and they disappear, all the ones. And
oh, yeah, that's right.
Find out you can't use them unless you use the card she has.
And she's a good West Virginia girl, so you should listen to her.
She is. She's from Charleston originally.
That's right. So if you fly that carrier frequently, it might be worth it to take those vouchers. But if you don't, then you probably want to try to press for the cash or the check, because that's straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, homie. You should keep in mind, too, Michael, that she's soon to be single.
Is she?
Yeah, her and Ben Affleck just filed for divorce. They've been separated, but they finally filed for divorce.
Poor Ben Affleck. He can't find love.
Well, I don't know who to feel sorry for there, but I'm sure the details will come out later.
Yeah, they'll be.
It's an amicable, though.
They'll be coming to a grocery store checkout line near you.
Yeah, whether it's true or not.
That's right. The Department of Transportation also recognizes that these vouchers might be a problem, and that's why it requires carriers to notify passengers of the terms and conditions of travel vouchers when they offer them. And that's actually contained in 14 CFR 250.9/C. So they've really thought this out with the whole government side of it. They've regulated exactly what they can and can't do and how they have to do it.
And all of this, pretty much, when you buy your ticket, you're agreeing to all this.
You are. Essentially, when you buy your ticket, it is kind of a contract. And I'm going to get into that here in a minute. Now, that was the United States rules. There's also some that are different in Europe, because Europe obviously has different laws, and they don't necessarily follow the the Code of Federal Regulations for the U.S. government.
Well, I figured we stole them all from Europe, so they should be pretty much the same.
We kind of did, yeah. So basically, in Europe, if a passenger is denied boarding involuntarily, the carrier must treat the passenger as though the flight was canceled, and that basically entitles the passenger to reimbursement of the ticket price within 7 days, rerouting, meals, refreshments, a hotel, and the cash payment, as discussed above. And that's under regulation number 261/2004, Article 4. So they have it seems like a bit better type system, even though ours is not bad. Seems like the European one's a bit more stringent and makes them give you a bit more.
Well, they're more civilized over there. They want to fully reimburse you if you've been standing in the queue and you suddenly get bumped.
I shall require a meal and a refreshment.
That's right. Tea and crumpets.
So,
what's on the telly? Oh, I believe it's a penguin. That's back to my old Monty Python days.
Now, so if the airlines violate one of these Department of Transportation regulations, the thing is that you actually don't have a private right of action to sue them for that. basically the Department of Transportation has to sue them for you.
So you just have to present something to them that makes them want to do that?
Yeah, or kind of let them know that this violation took place.
You complain to them.
Yeah,
you file a complaint or something like that.
That's right. And essentially the Department of Transportation will sue them, and then they'll enforce the rules and actually fine them. Now, what that means to you is you get nothing from it.
What?
That's right.
Then why do I even care if I'm not going to get anything? Give me the $13.50 then.
You want to see change. You want to see the change and, you know, them punished for not following the rules.
I don't care about that. I want my money.
Well, that's what makes me usually feel better at the end of the day. If somebody's violating my rights, a little bit of money in my pocket.
Yeah, there's no real motivation there to get involved in that.
Well, now, the Department of Transportation does file these actions somewhat frequently. And one statistic I saw, it said in 2012, they brought 62 enforcement actions and imposed more than $4 million in penalties for violations against the airlines. Now, I don't know how many violations actually took place and if this is a large amount of money considered the numbers we're looking at. But, I mean, $4 million in penalties, it's not a small amount, but I got to think it's probably a drop in the bucket.
Is that total for the year, $4 million?
Yeah.
Well, you split that up over so many airlines, that's probably not that much.
No, but that could mean that they're not violating these that often.
Well, that's true. Or people aren't wasting their time complaining about it because you don't get anything out of it.
That's right. Now, people have actually tried to file lawsuits directly against the airlines under state consumer protection laws. But essentially in Morales v. Transworld Airlines, which was the site is 504 U.S. 374 1992, the Supreme Court held that federal preemption completely prohibits states from enforcing any law relating to rates, routes, or services offered by the air carrier. So essentially, since there was a federal law on the books, it prohibited any kind of state action since they had already kind of entered the playing field in that area. So basically, the state couldn't also pass laws which affect that. So that's the whole federal government trumping state law. So You can't sue them under these state consumer protection laws.
So you basically don't have any kind of protection against it. You're at their mercy. So if you don't like it, don't fly with them, right?
Pretty much. The state consumer protection laws pretty much completely eviscerated, and any kind of tort claim as well, really you're just left with a breach of contract claim against them. And essentially, as you had mentioned earlier, that whenever you buy a ticket with these airlines, you are agreeing to their contract of carriage. And essentially what this is a one-sided contract of adhesion. Now, United Airlines is...
Adhesion, that means you're stuck to it?
Pretty much. It's the United one's 46 pages. And the contract of adhesion, and this is kind of a legal term, and what that essentially means is it's a contract where the terms and conditions are essentially set by one of the parties and the other party has little or no ability to negotiate more favorable terms. It's a take it or leave it contract. Basically, here's what it is. If you don't like it,
lump it or leave it.
Pretty much, yeah.
We don't care about you. We have you. We have you by the short hairs.
The short hairs. If you've been doing some manscaping.
If you've been doing some manscaping, there's none there.
So contracts like this are sometimes also described as unconscionable. And essentially a contract that is unconscionable is a contract that is extremely unjust or just overwhelmingly one-sided in favor of a party that has superior bargaining power.
Well, so, I don't know about the contract, but I think it's unconscionable to drag a 69-year-old doctor down a aisle of an airplane.
Oh, no doubt. It's horrible. I mean, that video shocks the conscience.
It sure does. It's just unbelievable, and that the airlines think that that's okay. And that, you know, the CEO, when he first came out, he basically said, well, the guy was kind of being loud and uncooperative and belligerent, and, you know, so it was one of those things that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good way to handle it. He said, we reaccommodated him.
Yeah.
Reaccommodated him? You rearranged his face. You know, when you reaccommodate his teeth to the back of his throat, you know, that's not reaccommodation.
No, I don't like their definition of reaccommodation.
No, and then when he got enough public backlash, he finally decided, Well, actually, I guess we didn't really handle that correct, and we're reviewing those procedures for future training. Well, yeah, you think?
Well, it makes you wonder if all these different people who have to be removed from flights from being loud or obnoxious are actually loud or obnoxious, or they're having their rights actually violated.
Well, it outlines, though, that it's like, for example, according to United's contract of carriage, whenever refusal or removal of a passenger may be necessary for the safety of such passenger or other passengers or members of the crew, including but not limited to passengers who fail to comply with or interfere with the duties of the members of the flight crew, federal regulations, or security directives. Now, the question is, was he doing any of that? Was he interfering with it? Was he causing a disruption or anything? You know, I mean, just simply because he said, I don't want to give up my seat, is that enough?
Well, playing devil's advocate here, you could say the way that's written, if he's interfering with the crew, was he interfering with that flight crew? Or is he interfering with another flight crew?
The deadhead flight crew.
The deadhead flight crew that's trying to get there. So, you know.
But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I understand if you're drunk and belligerent and, you know, you're causing a scene for the and being uncooperative, won't put on your seatbelt, won't sit down, things like that. I could understand all that, but I don't know. I think they violated their own codes there.
Oh, yeah. Well, and if they were, basically, if what took place was allowed under their contracts or their codes, then that needs to change. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, we need to all rethink that.
Yeah, let's go back to the drawing board on this one. So there's other kinds of places that have contracts like this and have different issues where you kind of have a contract of adhesion that you might not think about. One is like a sporting event, like a baseball game. If you ever look at the backside of your ticket, it's like a hockey game or a baseball game. It basically says that you agree
I've
to...
I've never looked at that.
Well, it basically says you agree to a puck in the face or a bat in the head.
Just for their fun?
Well, if it comes flying into the stands, you're kind of like, well, you know, it's just part of the deal.
Oh, it's not like you're agreeing to subject yourself to that, though.
Well, I mean, kind of you are. You're saying basically you understand it's a risk.
All right, now you agreed to take a puck to the face, stand there and take it, then we'll seat you.
Yeah, it's one of those assumption of the risk type things.
That'd be if United Airlines ran the hockey game, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the NBA, I noticed, has something that I thought was similar to it in their ticket. This was the Golden State Warriors, part of their season ticket information that they have that says that when by buying this ticket, you accept their conditions, a waiver of liability for personal injury. The holder of any ticket issued by the Warriors voluntarily assumes all risk and danger of personal injury, including death, and all other hazards arising from or related in any way to the event for which the ticket is issued, however so caused, whether occurring prior to, during, or after the event. Now, how many people bought a ticket to go see the Warriors and thought, well, if I die here, that's okay. The ticket, I bought the ticket, so it's okay. They can kill me.
This went out with a smile on my face.
Yeah. And then the other, you know, the holy grail of all football is, of course,
Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl. Well, here was these four poor schmucks from Pittsburgh that bought tickets to go see the Steelers playing the Packers in Super Bowl. Well, that's Roman numerals, but I think that's like, what, 65 maybe or something? I don't know, 45? Anyway, it was in February of 2011.
Where was the game held, you know?
It was in Dallas's new stadium. Had just opened.
Were they taking Allegheny Airlines from Pittsburgh to Dallas?
They probably were. I don't think they were around then. They'd killed off agony by then. But they bought four tickets and to go to the Super Bowl. They threw an NFL outlet, so it wasn't like they were scalping them or anything. And then when they showed up, come to find out, the Dallas Stadium seated 80,000. Well, they sold 100,000 tickets to the game because they were having 20,000 temporary seats built. Well, it ended up that their contractor was about 2,400 seats short on that. So 2,400 people at random, their tickets basically got nullified. So when they showed up at the game, they wouldn't let them in the gate. They went all around and finally got in the gate and they got in the gate, but they didn't have seats. So they had an obstructed view or had to watch it on a monitor and stand the whole time. So they sued the NFL, and the NFL ended up being held not responsible for that.
That's a shame. Well,
because They just said, well, that's too bad. It was something beyond our control, and you bought the ticket and assumed the liability. And it, apparently, I guess where they made the mistake when they took it to court is they tried to get damages of, like, pain and suffering and being inconvenienced and all this kind of stuff. They turned it into a tort law.
Right.
And really all it was breach of contract. So the best they could have done is gotten their money back for the tickets, but they ended up getting nothing.
Right. And that's a theory called the economic loss rule. And some states have that. And essentially the economic loss rule means that where you actually have a cause of action or adequate remedy at law, which sounds in breach of contract, you're not allowed to bring a tort claim instead of that, that you're basically bound to the breach of contract claim. And that's the economic loss rule. And there's some states that have it, and actually Florida used to have it, but did away with it, I think, recently. So it's one of those kind of strange legal theories out there.
Well, there's a lot of things we need to be aware of. And, you know, with this thing with the airline, I think that what we should know is that this started in deregulation, 1983, when the airlines were first regulated or first deregulated. And if you look at a chart of ticket prices at the time were very high. In 1983, they're higher than they are now, if you believe it or not. How many things over time go down?
Really?
But the ticket prices were higher, and it was because the government set the rate on what airlines could charge. So every airline that was loading a flight from Chicago to Los Angeles had to charge the same amount to get there. There was no difference in price. That's the way it was all regulated.
Yeah.
Once they deregulated it, then the airlines became competitive, and they found the way to get more passengers was by cutting your prices. So then people would go with wherever they could get the best deal. So the deregulation came about. So then ticket prices dropped all the way up until 9/11. 9/11 changed that. Now, since then, because other costs have been added, it's made flying more expensive. So they've risen again since then, but they're still better than they were in 1983. Therefore, what I'm saying is bumping isn't all bad. Overbooking the flights maintains lower prices for all of us.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of a hard thing to wrap your brain around. But
yeah, I mean, so as consumers, we don't like the inconvenience, but we also don't want to pay any more than we have to pay. So yeah. It's like that's the yin and the yang of the whole thing is that they do that, and it keeps prices down. And what's happened in return is most of our airlines fly at about 85% capacity.
Yeah.
So that helps keep the prices down because, of course, ideally, they want it to be 100% capacity every flight, have every seat full.
Exactly, yeah. It saves, you know, it's good for everybody.
And it saves them money, or they make more money, so therefore they don't charge us more money.
Right. I think, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think having them fly 100% occupancy is probably a good thing, although it's kind of nice when you get onto a flight and there's nobody sitting next to you and you can kind of stretch out. But at the same time, as long as they keep ticket prices lower, I'm probably all for it. But if you are going to bump people and make them not take their flight, we got to have a better system than this, obviously. Yeah. I don't think this is right.
Kimmel the other night was talking about this incident, and he was saying, what other industry would we tolerate this from? You know, he said, if you went into Applebee's and you waited for your table and they sat you down and you sit there and you've got your chicken dinner coming, and then the waitress comes up and says, I'm sorry, we've overbooked the seating and you're going to have to get up and go.
Yeah.
You'd leave. You'd never eat at Applebee's again.
No.
But with these airlines, something like this comes up. The next time you got to fly somewhere, you're going to look. And if they're a dollar cheaper than everybody else, by God, you're going to get back on that plane.
It's funny. You think about different industries that do this. I always thought about that, like doctor's offices and things like that. It's like you go in and you go to see a doctor, like, oh, you're going to need to have this procedure done. Okay. Well, how much does it cost? The doctor's like, well, I don't know. You're just going to need to have it done. Well, Maybe I need to know how much it costs.
You
know?
Yeah.
It's like, no, don't worry about how much it costs. You just need to have it done. But, you know, I mean, what other industry would that be acceptable in? It's just things like that. You come to accept it and it's just like, well, I guess that's how it is.
Well, do you know that there are other industries that overbook?
Who's that?
Hotels, car rentals, and U-Haul.
Oh.
They will overbook on there because they're counting on, well, first of all, that you have confirmed reservations, right? Your reservation may not actually be confirmed when it comes to hotels. Now, they have come back and told U-Haul, you can't confirm a reservation unless you're going to have it there.
Yeah.
They've told the rental agencies, the car rental agencies, you have to have a car for them, or you have to provide one from another rental agency for them. Hotels are the only ones that really are operating on a wide open plane that you may not know about. Now, they can overbook their hotel, and you have a confirmed reservation that you held with your credit card, and you show up there, and they'll say, I'm sorry, we don't have a room for you. And there are no laws that tell a hotel what they have to do, like there are for airlines,
yeah,
that they have to reimburse you. Hotels don't have to do that other than just PR reasons.
Now, the only thing that can make me think about why that might be the case is if you think about it, we go back to the Commerce Clause and interstate commerce. And since U-Haul and rental car companies, they are on the roads and they affect interstate commerce, they can be regulated by the federal government, whereas hotels, if they're not moving places, they're just basically on a state-by-state basis. So, although I think I don't even know if this is the case or not, but you probably could make some sort of argument that hotels do affect interstate commerce, but maybe they haven't tried to make that link yet. But I don't even know if that's the real reason or not, but that's just my first gut impression.
Well, they have a term for it, and they'll walk you is what it's called, because most hotels, if they've got to bump you, then they will try to find accommodation somewhere nearby.
Right.
And they may taxi you over there if you're not driving or something like that to try to minimize the inconvenience to you. But still, though, this could happen. Even if you have a reserved late check-in reservation, they may do that because they're kind of counting on, all right, this many people are staying over, but some of those people may decide we're going to check out and leave.
Yeah.
And they've got so many reservations, but some of those people don't show up.
You remember the Seinfeld episode where Jerry's renting a rental car and he goes in and is talking to the people and they're like, oh yeah, well we have your reservation here, but we don't have a car for you. And Jerry's like, that's the whole point of the reservation. he's like, look at me. And he takes his hand. He's like, I'm taking reservations. He goes, it's not about taking the reservation. It's about holding the reservation. it's really a funny bit.
I thought you meant the one where they got the car and it had the smell in it.
Oh.
And he said, it's more of a entity than a smell. You don't want to have that.
No, you don't want to have an entity that smells in your car.
But they do go on to say that if you were ever in a situation in a hotel and you're getting walked, that you do have your best thing to do is stay calm with the people at the front desk because they're just following orders. So the best thing to do is make friends with them. Don't yell at them and scream at them and talk about their family lineage because it's not going to help you. Try to be as polite with them as you can and recruit them to help you out because they usually have some wiggle room in how much they can do. And the nicer you are to them, then they will. Also, you may explain to them why maybe you're at this hotel because this is where your convention is.
Right.
Whereas somebody else that may have not have arrived yet, they are not staying there for that convention there. So that won't be as big an inconvenience for them to go to a different hotel. So you can actually try to leverage why they should keep you and walk somebody else.
Well, my word of advice in any situation like this is stay calm and be firm, but polite. That's always the best way to go about these things. Screaming and yelling doesn't really help.
No, it may make you feel better, but you're not going to get anywhere.
No.
And your blood pressure will go up and everything else. So
that's right.
Nobody needs that.
You want to be as cool as the other side of the pillow.
And then they may call those fellas that got on the United Airlines flight.
The Brute Squad?
To come drag you out of there.
Don't.
You leave with a broken nose and no teeth.
It's the United Airlines Brute Squad. Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we go over some different legal terms that have been brought up during this podcast, and we kind of go refresh them, make sure we remember what they are.
And I'll tell you what they all mean because I'm always 100% on these things.
Always. Contract of adhesion.
Contract of adhesion is when you get rubbed the wrong way and it adheres to you and leaves a mark. Or it could be take it or leave it. You bought the ticket. You're in for whatever happens. You schmuck you.
That's right. It's a contract where the terms and conditions are set, and you have little or no ability to negotiate more favorable terms. Take it or leave it. The next term, unconscionable.
Unconscionable. That's when you won't get off your flight, and the guys come and grab you and throw you across the aisle, and you hit your head, and they knock you unconscionable.
Kind of. It's a contract that is extremely unjust, which that was, overwhelmingly one-sided in favor of one party that has superior bargaining power. So it's a contract where you're, again, kind of a take it or leave it type situation, and you don't have really any ability to bargain.
Man, I want a bargain.
I just want a bargain. And last term, CFR.
CFR. Let's see. Country fried, no.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Continually codified federal regulations.
Code of federal regulations. So you're pretty much right on there.
Well, if I be the South, that's codified. Codified. I am codified.
I am bona fide. The Code of Federal...
Don't talk sex talk.
The Code of Federal Regulations are rules and regulations, sometimes called administrative law, published in the Federal Register by the executive departments and agencies of the federal government of the U.S. The CFR is divided into 50 titles, and they represent broad areas of federal regulation. So it's laws for the executive department. So
laws for the executive department. They are codified and certified and bona fide.
That's a lot of fides. Well, I want to apologize to everybody for my voice this episode. I had a bit of a cold, so I sound a little nasally. I apologize.
Well, that's all right. Just heal up, little buddy. We got a lot more to do. We've got a live show coming up. You've got to sound good for the live show.
That's right. April 27th.
In Columbus,
Ohio. We're doing our first live show.
Yeah. Considering we can get you well.
Yeah. I need some hot toddies.
We'll be there with sawbones and still buffering.
I can't wait. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And I finally get all those green M&Ms because that was in our rider. I want 1,000 green M&Ms.
Yeah, that was our contract of adhesion. We said take it or leave it,
take
right?
Take it or leave it. I want my green M&Ms.
It's good to be on the other end. It's good to be king.
No, we're not divas like that. We'll take both green and yellow.
Hey, by the way, did you hear about Delta's new promotion that they've got out?
I did not.
They've got a whole new commercials that they've cut. They've said, come fly Delta. We beat the competition, not our customers.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Sprung. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.
I'm just a dude, just a know-nothing dude, hanging out with a lawyer named Mike. Well, it's a long, long podcast, but I'm hoping for knowledge. A long, long podcast while I'm sitting in Sid's basement, but I hope I leave... Shoot. I can't see it. I'm just a dude, just a know-nothing dude, hanging out with a lawyer named Mike. Well, it's a long, long podcast, but I'm hoping for knowledge. A long, long podcast while I'm sitting in Sid's basement, but I hope I learn some law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will, but today I am still just a dude.